how to sequence your home yoga practice. We're going to talk both about how to establish your home yoga practice a little bit and then how to sequence your home yoga practice. And if you have specific questions about your practice or about what you're doing or about how what your sequencing fits in or what effects you want or how to get started, let me know. The first part, how to establish your home yoga practice, I have a little magazine-length article that's available as an Amazon Kindle book called How to Establish Your Home Yoga Practice, a step-by-step guide. The first step in that is to ask yourself, is it worth my time, money, and energy to have a home yoga practice? Because that's the very first thing, is to identify what it is that's motivating you to practice and tap into that motivation so that you want to practice and you remember why it is you want to practice, and that gets you going. So from there, there's a chart in the back of the book about, with all the steps, there are 17 steps to the process. So, you know, a lot of people just say, oh, I'm just going to start. But you have to do a little bit of preparation first so that when you start, it's a smooth start and you don't think, oh, I want to practice, but I really need some blocks. Or I want to practice, but I don't know where in my house I'm going to practice or where I'm going to practice. So I want to practice, but I have no idea what to practice. So you take care of all that stuff and get it out of the way ahead of time. And then go ahead and practice. And if you want, I'll email you a PDF.
Okay.
You can just let me know. So choosing what to practice, get your equipment, choose where to practice, prepare your space, identify possible obstacles, like the dogs are going to come over and bug me while I'm practicing.
You got the difference.
Or the kids, or whatever it is, whatever possible obstacles there are, only you know what those are. I do suggest that you commit to 6 months of daily practice, and that's for two reasons. And first of all, because it's easier to say, I'm going to practice every day, than it is to get up in the morning and decide, am I going to practice today or not?
So
just to say that I'm definitely going to do something every day is easy. Then you know by the end of the day, yes, I've done it, or no, I haven't. And then 6 months, because it creates a habit. And once you're in the habit, you realize all the benefits that you get from it. And it's easier to continue. So if you make that commitment up front, it's easier. I also suggest that you calendar when you're going to practice, because if it's on your calendar, it's more likely to happen for most people. Anticipate it. Begin. Do a reality check. How's this working for me? Make adjustments as needed. Keep going. Write down what results you're getting from your practice. So if you started practice for increased flexibility or being calmer or fitting into a certain type of clothing or whatever it is, write down the results that you're getting from it. Celebrate, because celebration's important. It's a reward. It's good to reward yourself. And then repeat, repeat, repeat. So that's a resource, and like I said, I'd be happy to send it to you. I just wanted to talk about that, because that's establishing your home yoga practice first is key, because then you can get into what? She's got it there.
No, I looked at your part and it's like, do you have resistance? Yes, I hate schedules.
Well, it doesn't have to be. That's one of the things about practicing every day, is if you hate schedules, it's just something that you do every day. Like, you brush your teeth every day. It's that just gets incorporated in with everything else. So talking about sequencing. The first thing I would say about sequencing is just relax about what you practice. Don't worry about doing it wrong, quote unquote. Your body will tell you if there is pain that this is something you want to do differently or do instead. So just do something. You can practice what we practiced in class the week before. You can play with a pose that, you know, maybe you've been curious about or been working on. You can even just get on your mat and do Shavasana, do corpse pose. If that's the only thing you do one day, that is still your yoga practice. It doesn't matter. It does not really matter what you do to start. It's just to get you in the habit of doing something. Like you said that you do it sometimes when you're out with the dog. You do tree pose or whatever. Yes. So that's good. It doesn't
down dog with the dogs.
Or down dog with the dogs. There you go. They do it. There we go. I want to do that too. Yes. Yeah. Yep. So whatever it is, if it's 5 minutes, if it's 10 minutes to start with, just to do something. Now, if you want to structure a more formal practice, there's really one hard and fast rule that the Iyengars give and no other ones. And that hard and fast rule is, if you do headstand, do shoulder stand. And we've talked a little bit about that before, that otherwise, headstand is kind of a more extroverted posture. It stimulates. Shoulder stand is more of an introverted posture. It brings calm. If you do headstand without shoulder stand, sometimes you can be a little more short-tempered, a little more quick to anger. So if you do headstand, do shoulder stand. They balance each other out. It's okay to do shoulder stand without headstand. But if you do headstand, do shoulder stand. All right. Beyond that, in terms of sequencing, there are kind of two keys when you're at this, if you don't have a firmly established inversions practice, then what the Iyengar say is start with the standing poses in particular. Because standing poses, all the standing poses build strength and stability. So if you're going to start your practice out, start out in Tadasana, in mountain pose. You can do tree. You can do triangle. You can do extended side angle.
Warriors.
With the warrior poses, yep. Any of the warrior poses, those are all standing poses. Down dog is a standing pose. It has many different effects. Down dog is always a good pose to do.
They don't do cat-cow.
No. It's not really a pose, per se. So. Well, all right, we'll talk about that, about what feels good. But first, just overall sequencing. So start off with your standing poses. The one caveat I'd say to that is, if your legs are already tired, start out on the floor and either skip the standing poses completely or see if you get a little bit of energy and come back to them. It's particularly true if you are a menstruating woman, the 4 days post-menstruation, certain post-ovulation if you're menopausal, if you're perimenopausal. So those are all kinds of things for women to consider. All right. From standing poses, if you're going to do headstand, that's a good time to do headstand. Or to do headstand prep, where you've got your feet up against the wall and you're at an L, or to just interlock your fingers and put your head down, lift your feet up, lift your knees up. If you're not going to do headstand, one of the things you can do as an alternative is extended wide angle pose where your head is down. That's an alternative to headstand. That's a standing pose that gives you some of the same effects of headstand. You want to work headstand into your practice where you're open enough that your shoulders and back are flexible enough, but not so tired that you're exhausted already doing it. All right, so generally after the standing poses, you can work headstand. Then after headstand, is a good time to do back bends because headstand prepares you for back bends. So you can do something as simple as laying over a bolster. You could do camel pose at the wall. You can do up dog. We've done, you can do cobra. You can do up dog on the chair or on the floor, any of those things.
What about the bridge one? Or I guess it's, you don't do it. It's not called bridge anymore. Y'all don't call it.
It's Chaturshpadasana, a four-footed pose, and it's an alternative to, generally where that works into the sequence, and we'll come to that, is it's an alternative to shoulder stand or a preparation for shoulder stand.
I often do that one because that's one of the things they gave me.
For your hips?
For my piriformis, my outer hips, my outer thighs, were weaker than my inner thighs.
Okay, all right. So we've got the standing poses, headstand, back bends. Then after back bends, you can, so you can either do forward bends or shoulder stand. You can kind of flip the order of those. So shoulder stand, let's say you choose to do shoulder stand next. You can do shoulder stand, or you can do one of the alternatives. One of them is four-footed pose where you're lying on your back and lifting the pelvis up, knees bent. Or you can lay over cross bolsters so that the shoulders are down, the head is down. Those are a couple of options for shoulder stand. Another option, more of a restorative option for shoulder stand, you could, do shoulder stand on the chair. That's a full restorative shoulder stand. Or you can put blocks against the wall and a bolster in front of the blocks and put your feet up on the blocks against the wall and sit on the edge of the bolster closest to the wall, then lay down on the bolster so that the shoulders come all the way to the floor. That's another alternative to shoulder stand.
And the bolster is across the shoulder blade?
The bolster is perpendicular to the wall.
Right, but where does the edge of the
It's most important that your shoulders be on the floor, but not so far on the floor. What you want is the opening of the chest. So ideally, the bolster will be at the bottom edge of the shoulder blades. Sometimes it's a little different to get the shoulders down on the floor. From shoulder stand or one of the alternatives, or you can include here with your shoulder stand practice, plow pose, where your feet are back over your head. You can do it as in a restorative manner by putting your thighs on a chair with a blanket on top. And then from, once you come down from shoulder stand, rest for a few moments on the blankets, head straight, knees bent, then roll to the side and you can do your forward bends here. Forward bends, particularly for women, I suggest sitting on some height. At least one blanket, maybe two. It helps get the angle of the pelvis right, better. And here with your forward bends, you can do things like intense stretch of the waist. Let me say something about forward bends. The most important thing about forward bends is the length in the trunk. So if you are reaching towards your feet, and you're getting curvature in your back, rather than bend forward more, take a strap and put it around your feet and just even sit upright. Because it's more important that the back stays straight than it is that you come forward at the expense of the rounding of the back. Right. Right, exactly. So what was being shown was, instead of rounding the back, bring the shoulder blades onto the back ribs and lift the sternum, lift the chest. And the strap around the feet helps that a lot because then you can pull on the strap. Yep. So you can do it with both legs out in front. That's Paschimottanasana, intense stretch of the west side of the body. You can do Janushirshasana, which is head of the knee pose, where you've got one leg straight out in front and the other heel brought in. You guys know these poses. You can even do something like, if you sit in easy pose, sit in cross-legged pose, in Swastikasana or Sukhasana and you put a chair in front of you, you can put your hands on the chair and just rest your forehead on your wrists or on your forearms. That's a forward bend. Mm. That will give you the effects of a forward bend. So you can also do Baddha-Konasana, bound angle pose, where the feet, bottoms of the feet are together. Same thing, have a chair in front and bring your head down to the forearms. You can do wide angle pose, where the feet, the legs are separated, have into like a triangle. And again, bring your forearms to the chair. All of those things are forward bends. Again, I recommend sitting on some height for forward bends because it'll help the pelvis to move in a way that's good. You want to lengthen the trunk, lengthen the pelvis so there's room for the pelvic organs. You don't want to compress them. And sitting on some height will help maintain that space. From forward bends, you can do a twist or two. Don't do twists if you're menstruating. Generally, Giriya Iyengar does not recommend doing twists in the 4 days after menstruation. But twist, you can sit on a chair, put your hands against the wall and twist towards the wall. You can even sit in easy pose in Swastikasana and just bring the opposite hand to the opposite outer knee and the same side hand behind. That's a twist. You do one or two of those. Usually people don't do a huge twisting component. Although there are a lot of twists in poses, but
the one where you put your knees on one side and your almost a T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We haven't really done that in class, but yes, you could do that. You want to make sure, if you're going to do a lying twist, you want to make sure that your hips remain grounded. So it's not just a wholesale coming over of the, well, we can work on that in class so you see what I mean.
There's one where you pull your leg all the way over and try to grab it.
Mm-hmm. So
Supta
Padma Hastasana has a lot of numbers to it. This is extended big toe pose where you're lying on your back, and the Supta Padma Hastasana 1 is where your foot is pointing straight up towards the ceiling. The other leg is extended out towards the wall. Mm. You can even use the wall, and if you can, with your shoulder blades on the ground, hold your big toe. You can hold your big toe, otherwise you use a strap. And that's one. And then two is out to the side. You take the leg that's pointing straight up towards the ceiling out to the side.
And apparently one day you're supposed to be touching the toe.
Yes. But it doesn't really matter.
But it feels good.
Where you're at. You know, to just do what you can do is the key. So, all right. And then the last thing is end with corpse pose, with Shavasana. Particularly if you do more than 5 or 10 minutes of practice, you want to give your body the opportunity to integrate what it's just done. To say, oh, this feels this way, this feels that way. I want to just build it all in, and for it to say, oh, maybe that was a little off there, but now I'm lying straight and it's all getting settled into place the way it's supposed to be.
You have to let your body rise like it's bread. It's good.
It's good. 5-10 minutes, if you can do it, is great. Shavasana is very calming. It's a fantastic way to end your practice, both to integrate what you've done and also just as a good, it'll be, it's both good if you're going to bed afterwards, because it's calming, and good if you're starting your day, because it's coming. Always a good thing. All right, so standing poses, headstand, back bends, shoulder stand or forward bends in either order, twists, and then corpse pose. Let me just talk a little bit about some of the effects of the different kinds of poses so that if you're getting particular effects, you can adjust your practice. So standing poses in general are going to be invigorating, particularly if you're jumping. Yes, they're gonna bring energy and be kind of ready. The headstand, like I said, it does bring blood to the brain, it helps clear the mind. It tends to be extroverting. Then shoulder stand is calming. Forward bends draw you inward. And so, oh, I forgot to say back bend. Excuse me. So let me go back to back bends. So headstand and back bends. Back bends are extroverted. They can, if you are already anxious, they can increase anxiety. So if you do your practice and you find at the end of it that you're kind of wired up and anxious, think about whether you've done too many back bends in your practice. Forward bends are bring you inward, and they can be, depending upon what kind of issues we have in our tissues, might be mildly depressing. So if you find yourself leaning forward and your head kind of, your brain kind of circling thoughts, it's good to just come and sit upright. Sit upright and look at mid-level or just above. And that will help that to go away.
Yeah, I can't understand why I don't feel the need to do lots of back.
So back bends are good to do if you're mildly depressed, because they'll open your heart and they'll open you and be slightly extroverting and just be more stimulating. Forward bends are good to do if you are a little more anxious or wired. Yes, exactly. Twists are great for everything. They help release everything. Right? So they're good for releasing things in general. They work the spine. And then Shavasana, like I said, just brings everything together. I thought I'd provide a couple of resources too. This book, it's a white book called BKSIN, it's by BKS Iyengar, Guruji, Yoga, The Path to Holistic Health. It's a big book, it's by DK, the definitive illustrated guide by the world's leading yoga teacher with a new chapter on his life and work. So this book is great for several reasons. The first of which is...
Oh, the pictures.
Yeah, it's got great pictures in it. Yes, so if you want to do a practice, it shows you what to do. But even before that, in the back of the book, starting at page 410, there is a 20-week yoga course.
Wow.
Which is much more accessible than the 3-year yoga course in the back of Guruji's Light on Yoga.
Which is what I have. Like, I don't think I could do that.
So you can, if you're going to practice every day, you can do the practice in the back of Guruji's Light on Yoga. He developed that sequence in the back of Light on Yoga, anticipating that people would practice like he did, which was 10 hours a day, every day, because it was his life. It is his life. So this one is more developed for
real people.
the person who may have other work and commitments and things. All right, and it takes you right from Tadasana, you know, from mountain pose through the poses. It lists what page the pictures are on, you know, so you can flip back until you're familiar with them. And in each of those, he's got information about how to do the pose and what the effects are and what are any kind of cautions for it. Then once you're through the 20-week course, then you can think about doing light on yoga if you like.
Yeah.
It's a good base. The other reason I really like this book is because even though all our bodies are different, and yes, the best thing is if you can get individualized attention, still, he has a whole section on here on yoga therapy. So if you have cold extremities, or if you have, let's say, a nasal cold, or if you have irritability, there's one in here for irritability.
Your sinuses run,
exactly. That's in here. He's got all kinds of sequences for that.
Symptom-based practice.
Oh. Exactly. And this is what Guruji, what BKS Iyengar is known for, is for yoga therapy. So it's your body. You'll have to try it and see, does this work for me? If not, then, you know, you need to make some adjustments or get some assistance, some individual assistance. But he's seen a lot of students over 80 years of practice. He's 95. He just turned 95 in December.
Amazon.
Are you going to email the name of the book?
Would you like me to? Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I don't have my cell phone, so I can't put it on my wish list anymore.
Okay. All right. So this book, for all those reasons, the pictures for the individual poses, the 20-week practice in the back, and then the individual therapeutic practices, is phenomenal.
What? Check it out the library first.
You could try. I've given the library a copy of Light on Yoga and it did not appear on the shelves. They don't have much by BKS Iyengar.
I don't know
that. Oh, okay.
Or if somebody's selling sometimes for books that are really expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can get it off of Amazon and buy
it.
Yeah.
And there's outoverstock.com has a book section.
Oh, they do?
If you can't find it, let me know, because at least last time I checked, Unity Woods in Bethesda had it on the shelf for like $40.
Okay.
All right. So that book is really good if you just want to have practices that you want to take lock, stock, and barrel and practice. Also, and it's in that book, that little magazine article that I wrote about how to establish your home yoga practice, the Iyengar Yoga Association of Greater New York has several practices at several different levels that are printouts that you can print.
And then there's that CD by that Italian woman. She does Iyengar. I think it's called Iyengar
Christmas. There are several senior Iyengar teachers who have CDs or DVDs. Patricia Walden has DVDs. She's excellent. She's based up in Boston. John Schumacher, who's the owner here at Unity Woods, has CDs, which are also very precise and easy to follow. So,
his are CDs, not DVDs.
His are CDs, yep. And if you just want to look at a particular practice, you can Google on YouTube.
Yes.
I had a particular pose.
Oh, okay.
And there, like, I know John has a bunch of poses on there that are worth watching. Then in terms of sequencing and effects, I found this book before I found Iyengar Yoga, but this teacher was trained in Iyengar Yoga. She was an Iyengar teacher, although she's doing something a little bit different now. But the book is very consistent with Iyengar Yoga. And she talks a lot about sequencing. She's got a practice in the back, a set of practices in the back that... First, she talks about the alphabet of yoga asanas. You know, so, you know, she's got a whole little section in here about putting it all together. And then she's got several practices, beginning and advanced or intermediate advanced sequences for particular effects. Like here's one, increases general strength, flexibility, and stamina, and stimulates. So, and she focuses on standing poses and sun salutations. This book is called Yoga, Mind, Body, and Spirit, A Return to Wholeness, and it's by Donna Farhi for students of all levels and traditions.
If you would put that in the email too.
I will, absolutely. The thing I'll say about any particular practice is, particularly, let's say, for the first 10 years of practice, you're generally going to want a more rounded practice so that you're generally not going to want to do a practice that's just forward bends, because it's going to have a pretty noticeable effect. You're going to want to have poses and what are called counter poses. So if you do forward bends, you're going to want to do some back bends. If you do back bends, you're going to want to do some forward bends, so that you're creating an even effect overall with your practice, not just going. I mean, you could try it, see what happens. But if you do all forward bends on one day, the next day you might be going to want to do all back bends or something like that.
So you can do it a different day. You don't have to do one, I did a forward bend, I'll just do a back bend.
Yes, you could try it.
Okay.
See what happens. And that's the thing that's really critical about the home practice, about what the value is, I think, in the home practice, is that particularly in Iyengar yoga, what's said is that we want you to have an in-your-body experience. And so it's the practice of asana, the practice of the poses, is a moving meditation. And what you're meditating on, what you're noticing, is the effects on your body. So if you want to do a practice that's all forward bends one day, great, do it. See what happens. Notice what the effects are. You want to do one that's all back bends one day, do it. Notice what happens.
I don't think I ever do. I think you just normally just switch it off.
A lot of people do, but as I've been told that as one progresses, that one finds more and more that the counter pose is within the pose. So that one could do a complete practice of forward bends, quote unquote, because one feels the back bending counter pose within the pose. So
that's what this lady talks about a lot. So you're like, you're not just pulling the pelvis down, you're lifting everything. So it's like a circle.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So try it. See what works for you.
But even if I do only one kind on the floor, I don't know, I tend to do something as I'm changing again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's what
Yes, your body may very well tell you. So, questions, thoughts?
What about equipment?
Uh-huh.
I bought one blanket,
mm-hmm.
but now can I just use regular blankets that
yes.
I have lying around, that I can fold, you know, one for a queen size bed, and I can fold it up to...
Yes, you can use whatever's in that. I mean, when I travel, I don't carry four blankets with me or three blankets with me. Whatever's in the hotel room is what I'm using.
Oh, okay.
So the thing I would say is if you're using it for like shoulder sand or something,
mm-hmm.
make sure it's firm enough
right.
to give you a good base. But other than that, I've also seen some people use four blocks for shoulder sand. They just lay four blocks down and use that as their base. So... that's another possibility.
Well, maybe we could try that the next time we have class.
Yep.
To see the four-block version of shoulder stand. Because mm-hmm. I like that. I'm not going to ever get to headstand, I don't think, because of the neck and all of that. But,
it scares the Jesus out of me.
Yeah, it does. I'm scared, too. Yes, that, too. But yeah, I do like shoulder stand a lot.
Okay.
So, would like to do that. Do you have to be on hardwood floor?
No. I've been in yoga studios that are on carpet. Hardwoods are nice because it's a, you know, it's a firm surface, but...
And it gives a little.
Yeah, and wood is softer than, say, stone, but I've practiced on stone, I've practiced on concrete.
I mean carpet. Like...
Carpet's okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because my little back bedroom, same house, that's a good little room.
Absolutely. I would practice on top of a mat so you
yes.
so it doesn't slide
right.
on you. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been in studios that are all carpet.
Okay.
It's fine. You can use the wall too,
mm-hmm.
the edges of the wall as a support or for to press into, to place your foot against or place your hands against.
I have one book on yoga and it says to hang over the bed and hang your head down.
Which way? So
to
you're
the
forward?
Floor, to the floor, and then I guess you can put some blocks there to help you or just hang.
Okay.
I don't know if that's
it's like
shoulder.
Headstand.
It's kind of like headstand, but you're not putting your head and your feet aren't going up straight.
Uh-huh. But it's like the headstand preparation we do.
Yes.
Where
yes.
you've got your feet against the wall, except your feet are completely supported.
Your feet are on the bed. And you're
right.
Just going in. Your head's just dangling over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep,
that'll give you some of the effects of headstand.
Can you speak about sequencing if you're having trouble sleeping a particular night?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you wake up in the middle of the night, what can you do? Yes, both.
Yes. Okay, so I'm glad you asked about that. So I didn't talk at all about pranayama. So pranayama is the breathing practice where you follow your breath. We talked about poses.
That was you sometimes during Christmas.
So pranayama is one of the best things if you're either having trouble getting to sleep or wake up in the middle of the night and want to get back to sleep. So to just lie in corpse pose in Shavasana, you can lie in your bed. That's the other thing I wanted to say, is that if some days you just don't feel like doing anything, just lie in your bed and do corpse pose. It's not, is it ideal? No. It'd be great if you got out on the mat and got on the floor. But if that's all you can do that day, that's all you can do. You just move the pillows aside and open up your chest, open up your arms, and let your feet be relaxed. And just lie in Shavasana, but it's an intentional. So you're.
Every day, so the only thing I get is I'm drying my hair. I'm like, I'm gonna do that thing where you lean forward and look.
Well, yeah.
That's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. So if you want to go to sleep, either you have, you know, you haven't gone yet, or you wake up in the middle of the night, follow the breath. So you wake up, you're like, okay.
Okay.
So just. Move the stuff and be intentional about it, about, okay, I'm going to lie in Shavasana, I'm going to lie in corpse pose, and I'm going to see, my eyes are closed, and I'm going to see which nostril is my breath coming in. And just follow the breath as it is for a few moments. Is it more on the left side? Is it more in my right rib cage? More in my back? More in my front, more in my pelvis, my abdomen. Just follow. There's nothing to do. And then once you've done that for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, go back to normal breathing for a little bit. And then go to making your exhale a little longer than your inhale.
I've been in classes where the guy also does meditation, he makes you do like a triangle. And usually when I usually fall asleep like during the holy part because it's 2, 2, 4.
So in Iyengar yoga, retention is not normally done except seated.
Okay.
And that's to keep the brain. Because you do it with locks. So just making the exhale a little longer than the inhale is generally very common. You can also do the bumblebee one that we did, that tends to be extremely common. It's called Bromery. It's the big black bumblebee. Just again, watch the breath for a little bit, then do a normal inhale, and on the exhale, just do a hum from the back of the throat. And do that a few times.
And do they have anything if you're trying to fall asleep or if you're like trying to wind down?
I mean, Shavasana is the, and any of the restorative poses are going to be relaxing. So, Supta Baddha Konasana, reclining bound angle pose, where you got the bolster behind you. Yes. Or even Supta Swastikasana, where again, anything where that bolster is behind you, your legs can be straight out, frankly. But having that bolster behind you, maybe a little blanket under the head and neck, is going to be relaxing because it opens the chest, so it creates space for more breath. The chin is lower than the forehead. That's what you want, so that calms the brain. You can just have the legs straight out. You can sit cross-legged. You could sit with the heels together, the bottoms of the feet together. Any of those things will be relaxing.
You can also sit down where you put your legs over the headboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it works well Kindle, because you can read.
Hey!
Oh!
Yeah. Might be counterproductive, though.
I'm not saying you're reading that. But I've always heard it would be bored. So I feel like I can read a Kindle.
You're not supposed to read things that are lit.
Yeah.
Apparently Kindle doesn't light.
It doesn't light. No,
it has something where it, I don't know if that's true. And you can lower it so it's really dark.
Because I have the Kindle too, but I use my iPad all the time.
No, that's apparently too much blue light coming at you.
For the iPad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the Kindle has something where it's actually only supposed to be shooting at the page. Can I see things using the Kindle screen? Yes, I can. But you can lower it.
So I know it's tempting sometimes to do other things while you're doing yoga.
But you shouldn't.
Well, it'll have a different effect.
Yeah.
Notice.
Yeah.
But if you do it, try it with and try it without and notice what the effect is.
Well, because they say you're supposed to do it for 10 minutes. I'm like, I can't sit here for 10 freaking minutes. The reason I can't sleep is because I'm all wound up.
Right.
So I need something to read in case I get bored.
So that, where you're face up, is not going to be as relaxing as where you're, particularly where your legs are up, as where you come forward. So even child's pose or something like
that.
So
if you're I think you do that first. I'm trying to remember what you told us I would have done. I think you lean forward. Oh, yeah, you're supposed to touch this part of your brain to the bed or something.
So that's something.
Down.
One thing I saw.
Pull the skin of the forehead down. So the skin of the forehead coming down is relaxing. People do that to babies to get them to sleep. You ever seen them pet their, just kind of, yeah, it does. It makes their eyes close. Makes our eyes close.
Makes kitty cat's eyes close. Like their mother's looking.
So, that's getting your home practice established, and then some thoughts about sequencing and some of the effects of different kinds of poses. Really it?
Okay. Are you going to post this? Because that was good. I can listen to it again.
Yes, I do plan to post it.